B-Pod Studios.
Paulie in the truck.
The audience loves him so much.
Dude, I love you.
It's kind of creepy.
Dude, you got me mesmerized, and I hang on every freaking word you say.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Bill, how big of a loss is Tre'Davious White to this Bills defense?
Yeah, he's a really good player. You'd have to ask him. I don't know. He's a really good player. But, you know, they seem to be very good at having depth and using their depth and being able to, you know, have enough people to play well through an NFL season. 13-3 last year. And, you know, nobody goes through a season without having to deal with something. And they've done it, and they've brought in, you know, Breed has given them depth at running back. And, got, as I said, they've got a couple of defensive ends. They juggled some guys on the offensive line, but, you know, with Brown and Williams going inside. So, you know, they have a deep team. They just keep going.
It's Bill Belichick, powered by the Oakers Company. Their TouchView contest is going on now. Oakers is providing one lucky school a free display panel, a free interactive display panel with a card. Get details and nominate your school. Just go to the contest page at 98.5thesportshub.com. Our thanks to Oakers for that. Bill Belichick talked about quite a few things today in his press conference, including going to Buffalo and dealing with Bill's Mafia on a Monday night and the importance of this game. And So
you can get booned on the way to the stadium again?
But no, we won't see it because it's going to be into the darkness of night.
Oh, right.
We're not getting in there. True. Like, buses won't go until 4:30. It's dark. But we'll see it on the way out because they all stand in their own trash, which is amazing to me.
It's going
to
be rowdy there.
Like, it's gonna be nuts.
Like a Monday night game with these sorts of stakes. Like,
I got to protect Sosie walking through there.
Could be trouble for Sosa.
Because there's no way. Because, like, in the main, what's weird about Buffalo is the where you call the game is separate from the press box. It's not connected. So you have to go outside through the crowd on the concourse to get to the two locations. And they know you. They know recognize that you're not part of this.
Right. Hey, you look like you're from Buffalo. You don't have Jim Kelly jersey on. You know.
I'm like, hey. You know,
they sound a little like Yinzers, right?
Yeah, they're Yinzers. They're in northern Pittsburgh.
Right.
They got up here in the lake.
Yeah.
You see that snow we getting?
Yeah.
Best is when the plane lands.
Those are the things they say, huh?
And they go through that first redneck neighborhood where the Buffalo Yacht Club is located, which I say all their junk boats are in their front yard. And then the fat guy in the tank top, he's waving the Bills jersey, flipping you off. And you're number one, everyone. And he's waiting for the buses. They know when the buses are coming.
What do you looks like me when you guys were playing Hail to the Victors.
Right. I'm like, you guys don't have anything else to do, like on a Saturday at 6. You sit there and wait for the New England buses to come by.
What do you think would happen to Sosa if you weren't there to, quote unquote, protect him?
Noogie?
Wedgie?
Wet Willie's easy.
Wet Willie's.
Stick it in her beer, shove it in his ear.
Swirly, maybe? Maybe a swirly if they were feeling
positive. Well, there's other ways Buffalo Bills fans like to keep their hands warm. You've seen the videos.
Yeah, I have. There have been lots of videos that have come out of those parking lots.
It's amazing the amount of sex that happens in a parking lot.
It really is.
Like, just the videos are unbelievable.
I guess,
like,
we shouldn't be surprised by what lands on the
field.
Does
this really turn you people on? Really? Like, does this turn you on?
Tools of the trade.
It was a marital aid, right?
Yes. What did Sosie call it in real time?
I lost it.
Some kind of an intimate accoutrement down on the field thrown by one of the
fans. There's a flag. I'm like, nope, not a flag. Flag on the play.
No.
That's a strange-looking flag.
Flag's not moving.
The ref has a tan flag for some reason.
And then you know it's bad when they're kicking it because they won't pick it up.
Oh, you don't know where that thing's been.
Oh, God. Yeah. Sure it was used.
Funniest thing was, like, the way it just landed. It just, like, it looked like it dropped out of the sky when it landed on the field.
It was the perfect
There was no angle to it.
Yeah, just like boom, on the field.
Oh, God.
It was such a good moment. I mean, it really was. And it was like, wasn't it when the Bills were still bad, too? So it was like.
Yes. Yeah. It was the Brady years when you're still kicking her ass. Yeah.
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 It's symbolic of it's a metaphor for something. I just don't know what.
You know what it is? Like, that crowd is 100. It's like 1989 Foxborough Stadium crowd. Like, it's the crowd that used to go to the Patriots
games. It's the people that show up. And I don't understand this for being an experienced, you know, tailgate crowd. They show up with, like, styrofoam coolers.
Yeah, like. So, like, when my when
what's
I was
wrong
kid,
with that? I don't know. Like, you would have it's a real great. Cooler, a real bag. Yeah, see, I guess.
My dad would
maybe home. That. Maybe that's why they're experienced people. I don't know.
So my dad would bring me to Patriots games when I was a kid. My mom thought it was a bad environment for children, which it was.
Yes.
Like Buffalo, like Orchard Park's a bad environment for children.
You should never take a child
right.
there.
Right. Yeah. Bad.
Yeah. That I'd used agree to that. Be what it was in New England.
Yeah.
Okay.
But well, I'd rather be there than in a Jet crowd.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a great environment.
They appreciate football better. Like, and the Jets want to fight.
And they're right on top of you, too. Like, in that stadium, like, yeah. when they're good, like, the it's small, but it's still, like, 60,000, 70,000 people, so they're right on top.
Oh, dude, I had a bad with the K-Gun when they were humming in the 90s.
Yeah.
You couldn't hear anything up there.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when the field had an arc to it. In the middle.
There was a crown, right?
There was a crown.
Yeah, the crown.
And you could literally look across the field and just see the knees. The opposing, that's how big the crown was right. in Buffalo. We had to get out there early and throw out routes because the ball would sell. Mm-hmm. You know, on a normal throw, you're like, I just zung it. What the hell is it selling for? Yeah. Then you got to aim down around the feet just for the ball to get there. It's crazy. It was weird Beetle throwing up there. That was the only few state, one of the few stadiums that ever had a crown like that. It was really.
I feel like that was like relatively, well, most, they at least had a little bit of a crown, most of the turf field. Like in the old.
They're
like,
pretty flat now.
The yeah. old like ping pong table turf, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now they don't have to be crowned. They right. have good enough drainage that they don't have to do that.
Right. That was just for water. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that was a good solid 8 minutes there.
I thought so.
On Bill's spot. Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Well, that's part of the, that's I, part I, of the, I, this I week.
Yeah,
where's John in Buffalo? He hasn't called in a while. Thought he'd be yapping this week.
So we need you to like tweet out videos from the bus, like whatever you see. If you see,
I'm anything. Not going to see anything though. It's going to be pitch black.
There are going to be some of those tailgates that'll have fires going.
Yeah,
stuff, you know. I mean, there's going to be some weird stuff that'll
Let's
happen.
Let's go to a call. Let's do that, Hardy. Does that seem like a good idea?
Sure.
Dan is in Methuen. Hi, Dan.
Hey, gentlemen. How you doing?
Hey, Dan.
I just kind of wanted to bring up why I don't think there should be ever any comparison from 01 Brady to Mac Jones this year, okay. because, I think people kind of think it's a blasphemy to talk about how Brady, or Mac Jones has better stats or whatnot, compared to Brady in 01, but Brady didn't walk into a coach that had 20 plus years experience. And, you know, 9 Super Bowl appearances and 6 Super Bowl trophies, you know what I mean? So it's a good thing that Mac Jones is playing as well as he is as a rookie because of the experience he's coming in. So I just don't understand, you know, I know the game has changed and whatnot, but obviously with a coach that has the resume he has now, it's a good thing that Mac Jones is performing better.
Yeah.
I'm confused about the point.
It's the same guy, though. I know that now he has the resume of the wins.
But he had the vision then.
I think the better argument is just basically, like how the position is easier to adjust to in the NFL than it was when Brady came in. And I think even like if you look at like the winners of the Offensive Rookie of the Year, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So since 2004, there have been 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 quarterbacks since 2004, right? Before 2004, there wasn't one between 1970 and 2004. Think about that. Offensive Rookie of the Year, right? Quarterbacks get graded on a curve. It's easier for quarterbacks to win awards. The last quarterback to win an award before Ben Roethlisberger in 2004 was this guy named Dennis Shaw, who I barely ever heard of, from Buffalo, 1970.
Wow.
So, like, why is it? That like for
pre-Joe Kemp.
Why is it that for 34 years, no quarterback won Offensive Rookie of the Year?
Yeah.
Because most of them struggled. Most of them had a really hard time, you know? So right. again, I think that's like reflective of what's happened in the league. It's easier for guys to, you know, adjust to playing in the pros because of the rules, because of the way offenses are, because of creative coaches getting mm-hmm. them more ready to play. Nine since 2004, none between 1970 and 2004.
All right, good. Let's talk more about the coaching aspect as it relates to Mac Jones. Is Mac Jones Josh McDaniels like Jared Goff with McVay when he came into the league with the Rams? We'll talk about that. 617-779-0985 and talk to you as well next.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hardy, a lot of good responses for your pickle.
Excuse me.
I think that would be really weird.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Bert Breer with us on Zolak and Bertrand. 617-779-0985. A caller last segment made a comment about Mac Jones needing to succeed based on the coaching that he has around them, that it would be a really bad sign, I think, if he were not having success the way that he has had this year. I put a lot of the credit on his development this year on Josh McDaniels. Bert, you and I and everyone here has talked about that. Mm-hmm. And I question what this looks like for Mac Jones if he loses Josh McDaniels this offseason. And you can make the comp of McVay and Jared Goff, you know, McVay being the reason why Goff had success at all. I don't think Goff is all that great. There's some people, Chris Gasper, who seem to think Goff is a good quarterback. I don't. I'm out on Goff. Is it that extreme?
I think Goff's a bad example. The reason why.
Okay, good. I do too, but go ahead.
Well, the reason why is because there was a lot of hand-holding there. Like, there was the thing, and it's a credit to McVay, like, thinking of this, but, like, getting the play call.
Talking in his ear.
Basically reading the defense. Like, you know, like everybody talks about how in college they look back at the sideline, right, for the call. That's essentially what was happening with Goff, because it was the coaches reading the defense and then giving McVay answers, right? Which is what you're doing in college when, you know, the quarterback and the, you know, rest of the guys in the field look over to the sideline for the call. Mm-hmm. And so, like, because of that, like, with Jared, there was a fair amount of hand-holding going on, and there was a fair amount of, I would say, smoke and mirrors. Every indication I've gotten on Mac, he's running the offense. Like, and that's not saying that he's what Tom Brady was in 2019 or anything like that, but, like, what they want out of their quarterback to run the offense, he is capable of running the offense. And I think there's a lot less hand-holding going on and more just teaching. And that doesn't mean he won't suffer from losing a coach, because every young quarterback suffers when that happens, right? Like, it's a blow. But, like, I don't think, like, it's quite the same as it was with Goff because it's just the amount of hand-holding that I think was going on between Goff and McVay. I don't think it's like that between Josh and Mac.
Okay.
Yeah, and also, there were some comments that Josh McDaniels made this week about getting really good feedback from Mac and being able to sort of tell, you know, the coaching staff and him specifically, you know, what he had seen. Here are those comments from Josh McDaniels.
He's a guy that wants to do everything the best he can, you know, and so if we for some reason didn't have great success in a series, then, you know, he's got an urgency about him and a desire to go out there and do it better, you know. And so what we've talked about as we've gone through the season is just, let's just focus on what happened. Let's learn from each play that we can look at on the pitchers and talk through and make sure that if it comes up again, which there's a chance that it will, that we get it right if we didn't happen to get it right the first time. But, you know, he's a very good listener. He's in tune with what happened, He usually gives me very good feedback for what he saw, which is a great sign for a young player.
Like Jared Goff wasn't doing any of those things.
Well, here's what it is. It's not just running the offense, it's applying the offense, right? Like, and I think that's taking the step of saying, because you always hear this, right? Like with a young quarterback, and you know, I remember talking to it's actually like Matt Nagy. I was talking to him about like the idea of what they were doing with Justin Fields, and he was explaining the different stages that they go through, right? And it's like, first you have to teach them in a lot of cases how to break the huddle. Now, he had some of that because he's coming from Alabama, but you have to teach them call play in the huddle and break the huddle. And that actually is more difficult than it sounds, because a lot of times a young quarterback will just have memorized the play call, right? So he'll just be spitting it out. Whereas like a veteran quarterback will be like saying to different guys in the huddle, all right, this part of the play call is yours. This is yours. This is yours. Break, right? So there's that part of it. Then it's, all right, now you're comfortable walking to the line of the scrimmage, right? And you're comfortable moving guys around within the offense, right? So that's the second piece of it. Then the third piece of it is you're looking out at the defense and you're weaponizing the offense against the defense.
Right.
And so the fact that Mac is already looking out at the defense and giving Josh feedback on what he's seeing defensively and talking to Josh about how he can weaponize the offense against the defense as a rookie quarterback, and Zoe, you'd know more about this than me, but I think as a rookie quarterback, it's a great sign. Like I said, that's a deep step, right?
Beadle and I talked about it yesterday too. The play action. He's hitting on play actions, and for whatever reason, I always liked play action when I played, because you're under center. When you're under center and you drop straight back and it's pass, the rush is coming at you upfield and you're retreating. So if you're in the gun and you catch it, you're already back there.
Yeah.
So I think it's a disadvantage to drop straight back from under center. But when you're dropping back and you're doing play action, it almost speeds you up to get you mechanically set, because it's ball, again, head whip around, boom, snap the shoulders. And it's almost like
rhythm.
The deep play action where he throws it to Aguilar on a deep out to the left, it's money, because it's anticipating. Back foot hits, throws it, gets him in rhythm. When he's in a gun, he's got to sit and wait for Aguilar. Ball sells. It's different to me. Mm-hmm.
That's a little. Like,
it gets you moving better.
I've also. It's interesting you bring that up too, because like one thing you hear about a lot of the quarterbacks coming out of college now is that they're uncomfortable playing with their back to the ball because they're in the shotgun so much. Like they're not basically if you're going through play action like Zoe's explaining it, like for the most part for the first second or two of the play, your back is to the defense, so you're not looking at the defense. And that like can take a lot of guys out of their comfort level, guys who've come from the college game and are exclusively in the shotgun. The fact that Mac's comfortable running play action, I mean, based on where the game is and what we see at the college level, is a good sign too.
Yep.
Yeah, I do wonder if 1 year is enough time to absorb everything there is to absorb. You know, Brady had the advantage of having so many years with McDaniels.
Right.
And also then obviously being the break in the middle and Bill O'Brien being the guy, but he had so many years of absorbing and developing and changing with it that I do wonder what 1 year is worth, if that's everything. You can get it all sort of absorbed in a year. And also, we haven't talked about this, Bert. We've talked about all the possibilities of where Josh McDaniels could go and what might be an attractive job. Is there a guy on the staff that should be considered a slam dunk to replace McDaniels?
On staff right now?
Yes, on staff. Not someone from the outside, because I can't see that happening.
I think the guy who's first in line is the tight ends coach, Nick Cayley.
Yep.
I very well respected. He's another one of the John Carroll guys, came up through there. So he's got a lot of background with a lot of people who not only work here now, but who have worked here in the past. And, you know, I know a lot of times we just look at it and say, well, it's got to be a quarterback's coach becoming the coordinator. More and more, you're seeing guys who come up as tight ends coaches becoming coordinators. That's actually what Sean McVay was in Washington before he became the coordinator. It's what Arthur Smith was in Tennessee before he became a coordinator. So, and I think a big piece of that is, what is a tight ends coach?
Right.
He's working both ends of the game, right? If you're the tight ends coach, you've got to teach the run game and you've got to teach the passing game, and you've got to understand how one fits the other. And so, I think Nick Cayley's been trained to do that. I know they think a lot of Mick Lombardi, too, who...
he's not ready.
But I don't know that he's ready yet. Yeah, so I think Nick Cayley would be the one in-house. I'd also be pretty stunned if they didn't at least make a call to Bill O'Brien. Especially because there's an existing...
No. Yeah.
Like, especially because there's an existing relationship with Mac Jones. I think I said this to you guys on the show last week, right?
Yeah.
Where, you know, Mac had actually helped to teach Bill O'Brien the Alabama offense.
Stayed there,
in January and February and March because he was training there for the draft. And so my understanding was Saban got O'Brien with Mac Jones, and Mac actually helped teach Bill O'Brien sort of the difference between the Patriot type of offense and what Alabama had evolved to, because Mac played for Brian Daboll as a freshman at Alabama.
Do you think Bill O'Brien could go from his current position to where he is to being, I know he could do it to become a head coach at the college level again. Could he do that to become a head coach at the NFL level again?
Going straight from being the coordinator at Alabama to an NFL head coach.
I mean, given he's already been an NFL head coach, but I think
if your goal, if you're Billy and your goal is to become an NFL head coach, then you go back to the league and become a coordinator in the NFL. I think if you're happy in college and you think I could be a college head coach, like that's where I think is more realistic, then you stay at Alabama because working with Nick Saban is going to give you all the training that you could possibly want to get that shot at being a college head coach, which he did a pretty good job at Penn State too.
Yeah, for the 2 years before he went to Virginia Houston. Tech people are trying to start rumors that he's going there.
To where?
Seen that?
Tech?
That I haven't heard that.
No, Virginia Tech got filled yesterday.
Oh, it did. I didn't even know that.
Yeah,
I'd seen the rumors.
Let me ask you this.
You know, they were. Anytime I see those coaching rumors, where I'm like, really, Virginia Tech? I'm like, oh, that's coming from the Virginia Tech people spreading that rumor.
Charlie,
sometimes it can become coming from the coaching agent who's trying to get his guy a raise, like what happened with Cliff the other day.
Yeah.
I mean, you notice how Cliff, like, he played it perfectly. Didn't deny any.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really want to talk about that
right now. Perfect. You know, like, it's just sort of like I'm trying to focus on
He's making
mirror.
$5 million. Of course he wants to talk about Oklahoma. You think Josh would entertain Notre Dame? Would they be interested?
That's a good one, Zoe. That's an interesting one.
He's a Midwestern guy. Like, and if everything's going cool.
They're going to have the money to pay him.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea. Like, I don't think that they
he'll make more there than he would as an NFL guy.
I think that like, Notre Dame has good options with the college coaches, with guys like Luke Fickell and Matt Campbell and Marcus Freeman now. But like, is it possible? Like, would that interest Josh?
Notre Dame.
Sure. Now, would Charlie not working out there affect how they see the idea of hiring Josh, though?
Well, don't be a hard ass like Bill was. That's what Charlie was doing. You know? Yeah.
But I mean, Josh is from Ohio, and like Josh, obviously
he's a Rust Belt guy, is what he is.
Yep, that's
well. And recruiting, like being from there, matters, though, right? Like, so, like you could recruit, like he could recruit that area.
I don't think it's that crazy. So
why don't we talk about the Brian Kelly thing? Because it plays perfectly into what you just said. A guy who's local that is going to be trying to recruit
St. John's Prep, right?
Louisiana, which should be something.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that. We'll get to that on the other side with Bert Breer. Here are the headlines with Hardy.
Protect your dream home with American Family Insurance. And you can weather any storm. You'll also save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote. Find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Zoe and Beetle, working to keep you up to date at work.
Rose.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, you'd know it if
you'd
you
know it if you smelled it.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
Yeah. Kill it. Thank you, T-Bone. Bert Breer with us of the MMQB on Zolak and Bertrand. Now, Brian Kelly is going to LSU, left Notre Dame. What does that mean for his future? What does it mean for LSU's future? What are your thoughts on this, Bert? I know you have many.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame's going to be okay because he had Notre Dame in a really good place. I think it's a little bit of a weird fit. A guy who doesn't really have roots in the South going down there. That said, I mean, Nick Saban's from...
Well, you don't think a guy from Everett is going to have the charm in the living room as Nick Saban?
Here's Nick Saban's from West Virginia, though. Like, it's not like Nick Saban's from, like, Dixie. You know what I mean? Like, so...
Yeah, but he's
got a Dixie feel.
Yeah,
he's got that.
He's acquired the Southern
party. He's got that slow Savannah draw, like molasses.
All right.
But I do think there's going to be an effect in the NFL, And here's what I mean by that.
Okay.
So
that.
And I think this could get really interesting with certain coaches in the NFL. You notice what's happening now is because of where the money is and because of the stakes in the college game, right? Like where everything's going. USC and LSU in normal years would have gone and gotten some hot young coach coming up at like wherever, you know, like yeah. it's some like group of five school or some lower tier power five school, yeah. or they get someone's coordinator.
Like
they,
Iowa State.
They do something, yeah, like yeah. Matt Campbell to Iowa State. Instead, what was it? A blue blood taken from another blue blood, yeah. right? USC steals Oklahoma's coach, LSU steals Notre Dame's coach. How does that affect the NFL? How long has it been since we've seen a team go in and try to poach another coach?
Haven't.
Right? Like from a sitting head coach from another team. It happened with Parcells way back in the day,
yep.
right? With the Jets going and taking him from the Patriots.
It Andy Reid got fired, right?
Yeah, Andy Reid got fired. John Gruden, you know, the Buccaneers
fired.
Traded
yep.
the Buccaneers yep. traded draft picks to get him from the Raiders in 2002. So I think you're going to see some teams take those sorts of swings. And I think that seeing this happen at the college level has probably got the wheels turning on some of that. So a couple examples. Mike Tomlin. In Pittsburgh, right? And I know he pushed back against going to college.
Doesn't look too bad now, huh?
But here's the thing. Here's the thing. Ben Roethlisberger could be gone after this year. The general manager there, Kevin Colbert, who's been there forever and yep. has done a great job, could retire. If now you've got no quarterback, no GM.
That's what I said.
If you're Mike Tomlin, you've been there 15 years. That's as long as Cowher was there. What happens if the Las Vegas Raiders come in and say, we're going to give you control of the whole operation?
Gone.
See ya.
Right?
Bye.
How about this? The Bears, okay? If you're Chicago, got the young quarterback, Ooh. Would you look at Sean Payton? Would you say
Ooh,
Sean Payton's got
okay.
Sean Payton has a quarterback issue in New Orleans? Sean Payton's team has gotten expensive. The cap is a little bit of a mess. They've got some age in some key spots.
Yeah,
is it time
your
for
best
Sean?
Player's hurt?
So where's Sean? Where's Sean Payton from? Chicago. He played for the Bears, right? The general manager in Chicago is Ryan Pace, who worked with Sean Payton in New Orleans. So I'm just, again, like this is just putting pieces together. But I think like what you saw happen in the college game
yeah.
where you see schools throwing around huge money and saying, screw it. We're not going to Iowa State to get our coach. We're going to another big school and we're going to take their coach. I think you see that at the college level. And if you're an owner, like you're an NFL owner, you say, you know what? There's no salary cap on coaches. Why am I not spending $15 or $20 million a year on a head coach to get the right head coach?
Especially because guys want those jobs. They've used it. They've used it to their advantage. They have not paid for coaches the way college is now paying for them.
Right.
They haven't.
And, you know, you could argue that there might be a little bit of, you guys know what the C word is.
Collusion. Yes. Oh, no. We talked about it this week. I said NFL owners have colluded in coaching salaries for years. And the question I have, and Zoe had brought up with the Lincoln Riley news and him going to collect all kinds of money at LSU was, does this somehow raise NFL head coaching salaries? And Zoe, credit to Zoe, he brought up Tomlin the other day and said, you know, Tomlin sort of shot that down. Well, now the money is getting crazy in college coaching. So those jobs have the chance to look more attractive than NFL jobs. Zoe mentioned it again. You go to Notre Dame if you're Josh McDaniels, you'll make more money there than you will in the NFL. And that just doesn't make any sense.
Right. Well, I think the issue with college jobs is a lot of guys don't want to recruit.
That's the problem.
And that's what I'm talking about. And who would you rather coach college or coach in the NFL? The job is a better job in the NFL.
I think so too. And I think
of course, unless you're Nick Saban.
It comes down to two things though. It's control.
He sucked at it.
It's control. Yeah. It's control versus time, right? In college, you have more control. You're not answering to an owner. You're basically picking who's going on your team.
You're building a program.
Like you're building a program.
There's a whole bunch of BS you got to deal with at that level, though, too. Beyond
sure
just
is.
Kids.
But you have to deal with that in the pros, too. And you're not, and you are in control. If you're one of these guys, like at a big program and you've established yourself, you've got control, right?
Well, it's not like you got to go have lunch with some oil baron once a month in the NFL. You know what I'm saying? Like at certain schools, hey, you got to go meet with whoever.
Right.
Yeah. Go have lunch with him. Why?
Right. So, but I mean, like, the flip side is your time, right? College coaches, like, the way it is right now, you're never really off, You know what I mean? Like, you're never really off. Like, like, they have to be on social media. They have to be texting, like, constantly with these guys, even when they're on vacation. Because you know what? If you're not texting with them, you know who is? Your rival's texting with them, right?
Yep.
And so, like, I think for a lot of these guys, it's a lifestyle thing. And Beatle, you, I mean, I think this is what you're getting at, is do you want to have your life, like, revolve to some degree around the whims of 16- and 17-year-old kids?
Because those are really
and those kids are going to be the ones that are going to determine whether or not you're a success. Because if you get the best ones, you're going to have a chance, right?
I remember we had Pete Carroll on my radio show when I was in Providence. And this is after USC won the national title, and he's sitting on the bench. And he called us from his hotel room because he was on delay and, like, missed the first two times he was supposed to come on with us because he was busy texting and calling recruits.
Right.
Right as they're winning the national title. Yeah. That's how he reloads. Like, I mean, that's the stuff you got to do where Bill could just grab a beer and go sit down after he wins the Super Bowl.
Right.
You know?
Now, in the NFL, you do work a lot of hours, but when you're off, you're off. Like,
yeah,
I mean, short of like Jason Pierre-Paul blowing his hand off with fireworks, like on the 4th of July, right? Like, short of something like that happening, like when you're off, like you really are off. Like, Bill can go to Nantucket in the end of June and beginning of July and doesn't really need to worry about it.
By the way, I'm getting corrected. Brian Kelly grew up in Chelsea, not Everett.
God forbid you get that wrong.
My mistake. He grew up in Chelsea.
How many corrections did you receive, Beatle?
Yeah.
I got that on Twitter.
Don't know your background.
He's in Chelsea. I get it. I understand that. I understand.
It's someone calling yesterday.
Being defensive.
I'm a friend of Brian's. What's your problem with him?
Yeah.
There's a for
he
a place
grew up in Chelsea. Bert was right.
He hasn't won a big game.
For a place that doesn't care about college football, there's a weird like number of college football coaches that have come out of here.
Chip Kelly.
What's the Irish?
Ryan Day.
Yep. Fighting Irish.
Dan Mullen is from New Hampshire. Now, he just got fired, but he was at Florida, which is a huge program. Yeah, there's like a strange number of...
It's funny. It's almost like we have smart people here, Bert.
That's true. Yeah.
Funny how that happens.
Yeah.
Guys who can hit the books and plan and do things like that.
Yeah.
Joe is in Leicester today. Joe, go ahead.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey.
Great show, by the way.
Thanks.
So I'm just wondering, you know, they went out, they retooled, they brought in the tight ends, they brought in Kendrick for the receiver. They didn't go after and get a slot guy, and I'm just wondering, is that something they're going to address? I mean, Jacoby, he goes across the middle a little bit, but do they need a slot receiver? How good could Mac Jones be with a bona fide Edelman, Welker type slot receiver? And is it something that they should address? Do they need to address it? And I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you very much.
I think sort of goes back to what you talked about with Troy Brown earlier, Bert.
I think Bourne can play the slot. Like, I know they used him, like, I think, to some degree in that role in San Francisco. And, you know, like, maybe you don't need him as much there right now because of Jacoby. Because Jacoby's like, it's the pieces fit better
together. Jacoby can't be an outside guy.
Right. Jacoby can't play outside. So, like, maybe that's just the way it fits right now.
Right.
But we've seen teams like employ faster slots. Like there are some certain teams that play that way. And so I don't think it's like out of the realm of possibility that you go and draft like more of an outside receiver and then you move Bourne inside and Bourne maybe becomes your full-time slot guy. I don't think that that's like an idea that would be that strange. Like I can see it happening. Don't you think? Like I think Bourne's got
he's shifty. Yeah, yeah,
he's got the short area quickness.
He's got that quick
and the build too.
Yeah.
Like he looks like one. When you look at him, he's built like one.
Yeah, he is.
Email for all of us here, Bert, from William.
Hey, William.
He says, guys, I don't know if a sex toy ever landed on the turf in Foxborough, but let's not forget we did have a guy get electrocuted by trying to carry the goalposts across Route 1.
That was the old stadium, Bill, right? Like, that's what he's talking about.
I have a question on that.
He's just following up with a little anecdote for you after you mentioned that.
Route 1 has not changed that much over the 40 years. Like, that road is still there.
Where did he get shocked?
He hit power lines, though.
So the goalpost was upright instead of... See, when I envision you carrying the goalpost, when you tear the goalpost down and you carry it out, it's under your arm and you're with a bunch of guys carrying it out.
I mean, like, there's going to be a lot...
You don't
for you to get the goalpost...
Keep it upright!
There have to be a lot of authorities looking the other way if you're getting the goalposts all the way down to
Route 1. We're going to do some kicking in the parking lot.
Listen,
Don't lay it down.
Like, how many people need to be looking the other way for you to physically get the goalposts to Route 1?
Let me read it to you from the AP in December of 1985. Five young men celebrating after the Bengals-Patriots football game were hospitalized with electrical burns after a section of a metal goalpost taken from the stadium touched a 13,200-volt wire, according to Massachusetts State Police.
That sounds like a lot.
That feels like giving you a good jolt.
That's not just like getting bit with a little one pen there and, and you're changing out a light.
That's not switching out the light switch and you forgot to hit the breaker.
It's not a cattle wire.
The incident was part of the rowdiness that erupted Sunday when a near-capacity crowd of 57,953 celebrated New England's 34-23 victory and the Patriots' wild card berth in the National Football League playoffs. Quote, "This is the worst I've ever seen it," said Trooper John F. Gillespie, who has been stationed at the Foxborough Barracks for 7 years. That guy was in Foxborough for all the games between at least 78 and 85.
Which was like, I think it was like the real hot spot, right, for that sort of activity at the stadium?
Yeah. 37 people were arrested on charges ranging from drunkenness to larceny to driving under the influence. 6 minor motor vehicle accidents and numerous brush fires were reported after the final game.
Numerous brush fires.
The 5 injured by electricity allegedly were among as many as 800 people who tore the aluminum goalposts at Sullivan Stadium, broke them into sections, and carried them out onto nearby Route 1 for about a quarter mile, blocking vehicles
broke them
and
into
pedestrians.
Well,
it's aluminum. It's like a can.
Another trooper, David Ray, said, quote, "The crowd was chanting them on. There was a great deal of alcohol involved." Oh, so there you go.
I've had a bad experience with a goalpost. My freshman year at when we beat Michigan, I jumped up on it.
That's badass, huh?
And they greased it up. So, like, a bunch of us just tried to jump up on it. You slip right. And I only felt like it hurt. Like, I fell on my back.
Was that the same night you got shot with the rubber bullet?
That was 3 years later.
Here's how it happened.
You learned your lesson.
Before a quick timeout here, it says one of the goalpost segments was eventually put into one of the barrels on the highway that is used to mark temporary traffic lanes. But the pole was top heavy and it began to tip over. And so 5 men tried to grab it and right the pole, but were then struck down by the high voltage.
Right. Well, now I understand how that could happen.
That sounds like a cartoon, doesn't it?
One of the actual uprights.
We got to get it back upright.
It sounds silly, to have that happen to you until you understand, okay, well, that could happen to anybody. You're just trying to put the section of the goalpost back up. I also like the numerous brush fires that were reported. Like, what else happened? As a result of the celebration, there were brush fires, mudslides, a small flood.
They actually give the names of the guys, too, in the story. They identified 4 of the 5.
What are the names?
The fifth one was 15 years old, so they didn't release his name.
Was his last name Murphy?
And that guy right now is listening Sullivan. Going, oh, thank
Sullivan
God.
Sullivan Murphy? O'Connor?
Right. We'll wrap it up with, I'll give you the last names. McKenzie? Palazzola? Abramson? Steve?
Abramson
and Page.
Ooh,
those are the 4.
McKenzie was definitely the ringleader.
Oh, he absolutely was.
Where are those guys? Should do a reflective.
McKenzie
ESPN
was
30 for 30.
Going, we're taking the goalposts. Let's go.
We'll wrap it up
with Burt Breer next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.